We are Brightside, home of the
right now. So this sure. is Keith Harrison.
Should I pour myself a beer?
There you go. Oh, man. I have never... This is going to sound weird, but I think I can explain it. I've never looked forward to a conversation with somebody, one, that I've never met, and two, of something that I don't think I can ever have. But I am so excited to talk to you about this. Everybody listen, this is Keith Harrison of Total Home Technologies. Joe, a listener, sent me an email of this article. I talked about it last week in the podcast. And Keith got back to me.
Just I had nothing else going on.
On Easter Sunday. And I'm like, I wanted to reply to you so bad, but I was sitting at a table with my wife's family. And I was going to reply.
Laptop down.
I was on my phone. I'm on my phone. And it's like, I literally, all Easter Sunday, I didn't do anything. I didn't do any social media. I didn't do it until 10 o'clock at night. I left everything alone. But I got that one email and I looked at it. And I just was like, oh, this is intriguing. Just the title of it, right? From my listener, Joe. And then I was like, oh, so I read the article. And then, like I said last week to everybody, I reached out to you and I didn't want, and on your website, the way to reach out to you was a phone call or you had to fill out that little form. I was just looking for an email or something. So I was like, I don't want to call him. It's Easter Sunday, but I got to get this off my chest. So I filled out the form and I'm like, it's Easter Sunday, like 11:30, 12 o'clock. And you got right back to me. I got the email right. I was like, and then I was like, I can't reply to him right away. I wanted to. But I waited till Monday to be respectful to you because I'm like, seriously, because if we start talking here, I'm never getting off the phone. I'm never doing anything. And so we hooked up. Literally, this was yesterday. And now here we are on Tuesday. Keith, you are. I can't wait for people to hear all about your business, all about your business model and everything. And but man, you are a man of get it done now, which is perfect for your business. So thank you so much for everything. And this is going to be one of my favorite interviews, conversations, whatever the hell you want to call it. I don't even know how to start. Do we just tell everybody exactly what you do in your business model? Do you want to tease them a little bit and start with your history and how you got into this?
I mean, you know, most people would be bored by that. I mean, I'll just give you the short version. I started this company January 2nd, 1992.
Wow.
So it was a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah.
It was a shithole. They had an unbelievably hysterical video of it that somebody dug up and found old photos of it for the ProSource Awards last year when they gave me my little award. There were some very embarrassing photos of my original store that didn't have running water and had a cement floor, didn't have carpet. And I mean, it was a shithole, but I loved it. I loved it. It was mine. I was 20 and it was the greatest thing in the world to me. You know? And I was going to make it awesome. You know?
Yeah.
I muscled through like that for the first, let's say, half of my career for a decade and a half. And I enjoyed what I did. Definitely pushed boundaries of technology because a lot of times the stuff didn't exist. So you had to kind of create it. But at the same time, it was a lot of retail. I mean, I sold cell phones and originally beepers, and put CD players in cars. And, you know, it wasn't, if you think about it at that time, the internet had yet to be invented.
Yeah. For the masses. It was there. I think it existed, wasn't it? But we didn't have
it. The World Wide Web did not.
Right.
So I would say the thing that really kind of made me stand up and think was when DirecTV came out. And it wasn't the first satellite company. There had been satellites for decades, but
The big giant ones that you could get like channels from China and stuff.
But I just, you know, somebody who I knew or trusted said, this is going to be a big deal. Take a look into this. And I bought one and called them up somehow. They, you know, it was like the first guy answered the phone. You know, they had like four customers at that point. And they made me a dealer. I don't know how they did. And they gave me this thing that looked like, you know, a pretty hefty book. You know, a couple of hundred pages. It was a textbook. You had to read to learn how to do it, so you really understood. And I read that thing cover to cover. And it was mostly about pointing the dish.
Yeah.
And what they glossed over, which rightfully so, was it had to, so it was one of the first things that you also would connect to your stereo and not just your TV, right? That was really just starting to happen. So I was like, well, I know how to connect it to the TV and I know how to connect it to the stereo. And I read this massive book. I know how to get the dish up top and I know how to point it. And there was something else you had to do as well. You had to connect it to a phone line.
Yep.
Because it was kind of ahead of the curve. Back then, you called up a phone number, gave them your credit card if you wanted to watch the fight that was on that night. That was pay-per-view was call a phone number. And it was awful. It was everybody hated it. You'd have to get on the phone in the afternoon to watch a fight in the evening if it was a popular fight. Because the phone would just be busy. And this was, you could just press, I want to watch now, and box took care of it. And when I went to go put it in the house, I went up and I put the dish in and ran the line for the dish and connected it to the TV and even connected it to the stereo. And then I said, well, you know, where's the phone guy? Because there was some construction going on in the house. Like, where's the phone guy? No phone guy. Can't you do it? Kind of, that was kind of it. I was like, you know what? We're taking a bunch of things that none of them are really, really, really that hard by themselves. And I'm taking care of all for the client. And the client, you know, I was like, well, you get the phone company, they'll come and do it for free.
Right.
You're, how much will you charge me? Oh, you know, light bulb. You know, they don't want to pick up the phone. They don't, right. You know, they're like, can you just take care of it?
And, time is money, and you're there.
The total and the total home technologies is from, you know, like that was the idea. Oh, we could, you know, at the, that point, I kind of thought I could take care of everything. You know better now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd forgotten all of those details. It's so funny because
a minute after that, the internet came out and became a deal, you know, and quickly broadband. But broadband was for one computer and the modem wasn't always in the right room. And then there was, oh, wow, we got a second computer. And then, you know, you can see where it goes from there.
Right. So, yeah, wow. And yeah, it's
like, and I kind of learned, like, I sold cell phones, I sold DirecTV, and you quickly learned that there was pretty much no money in the park.
Okay.
Right. Like quickly DirecTV started to say, oh, you want one? We'll sell it to you for $199, you know, cause they got the subscription, you know, you quickly realized that you couldn't compete on the part. You know, I used to give away a flip phone for free and through commissions and everything else, I'd make $200, but you know, eventually the cell phone carrier would give a phone away for free to the client. And, you know, more expensive. I couldn't compete. You know, like how you can't go any lower than free, you know?
Yeah. So I couldn't pay you to take it.
Right. So I realized I was like, okay, well, but the cell phone company won't take all the phone numbers out of the one phone. I bought some program to do it. A serial cable and,
yeah,
I was like, well, I'll say if you buy the phone for me, I do that for you. Ah, now that's a value, you know, like,
yeah,
I don't realize for a small company, you know, for like a sub $10 million company, it's and I'm much smaller than that, but I'm just saying anybody less than that, it's pretty tough to compete against what used to be mail order and is now the internet and Amazon. Right? It's always been, you will always sell the part to the client for less money.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, well, you're competing with DIYers, right? And like myself, that's what I am. And that's why, like, when I opened up this and I said, I'm like, I don't think I can ever have what you do because I don't know if I can afford it. One, I wish you weren't you're in Jersey, right?
I'm looking at the city right now. I live in Hoboken.
Okay. So I'm up in Massachusetts. So we're a little too far apart, but I'm like,
guys in your area though.
Oh boy. Oh, see, now you're killing me. So, and we'll get into it because I'm in the middle of building a new home theater or designing it because I'm building a new house. Right. And now getting into having an integrator, I never thought I could afford it. So I'm like, I got to do it myself. And a lot of like what you're talking about is like that. And what I read in the article and I liked, and like I said to you before, I'm like, we're a lot very much like-minded, is that we're always thinking about the next step. Right. And that's what you're trying to do for your customers. And I love that line of thinking. And when it came to getting an installer, I'm like, well, I don't want to have to try to get somebody back out to do my system or to do this or to do that. I'm like, I might as well do it myself because one, it saves me the money. And two, it's more of me. I'm going to learn about it and I can fix it. And I don't have to worry about trying to get somebody out here. So reading this article, I was like, oh my God, are there more people like you? Are there more companies like you? But this, what you've done, and I love your beginning story. It's like the passion you must have for home theater and all of this stuff just to keep going, because it isn't an easy business. It isn't an easy lifestyle. It's not, and we've all had it. I mean, there's not a home theater guy I know that I've talked to that we all aren't installers, right? In our own right, because every family member is like, my TV is not working. Yep. Okay. Do this, unplug it, plug it back. You know, so we're all helping people. And the idea, and I've had it a million times. Oh, maybe I should start my own home theater business. I work outside all day. I'm like, at least home theater's inside. But I could never get over that part of having to deal with people with the issues, because we all know tech has issues.
Sure. We live in the world. There's one of my many Keithisms. We live in the world of updates and reboots.
Exactly. I read that in the article and I was like,
we live in the world of updates and reboots.
And here's the thing. Most of my listeners, myself, most of the world hates that, right? You see it and you're like, oh crap, what's going to happen? But most of home theater people, really passionate people, are like, what am I getting that's new? Right? We're excited about it. You're answering that. You're catering to that, to help people with that. And you've made a business out of that. So let's get, like, explain to everybody exactly what you do and like today and jump ahead. I think this is amazing.
Yeah, and I could have the conversation of DIY at another point with you. I have my, and by the way, some people should not use an integrator, right? Some people, this is their second love to play with this stuff all day long. But, it changes if you have a family.
Yeah, like golf.
It changes a lot. But either way, right now we do, you know, we are a Control 4 Pinnacle dealer of the professional series products. That's the one we choose, but they're all really good. Mm-hmm. You don't shop for the groceries, you shop for the chef. But because we live in the world of updates and reboots, and mind you, maybe even people want to know why. Why do we live in the world of updates and reboots? Because we used to not, right? it was funny. I sold a brand new TV to a client, and I won't name the brand because it doesn't matter. I sold them a good quality product, name brand, brand new TV. And within 6 months, you know, there was an issue with it where the TV wouldn't turn on. And it required a hard reboot. It required a plug cycle. And the client said to me, we had taken his old, old Fujitsu plasma off the wall that he was clinging onto with dear life.
And he never had to do that.
And he's like, I had that other TV up there for, you know, 15 years, 16 years. And I've never had an issue with it. And it works just fine. And you sold me a brand new TV and I'm already rebooting it. And all I could say to him is, yeah, and it's going to happen again.
Yeah.
And it probably needs a software update already.
Yeah. Right? So people are having issues with that, huh? They're not accepting of that.
We're in this rat race of coming out with newer, better, faster. And I'm not necessarily saying that's a bad thing, but it's a reality. Mm. So if you're a manufacturer of a product and you want to, and most products have to run software, well, you could decide to write the software from scratch. And in the past, like did, you know, like if a TV manufacturer wanted to put Netflix on their TV, when TVs first started getting internet connectivity, they had to go to Netflix and basically code from scratch that app. And if Netflix made a change, they had to recode that app. But there are really good operating systems that are powerful, that have apps that run on them that the manufacturers take care of. And the most common one is Android. Android and or Linux is on everything because it's a powerful operating system that's free. But if you want to build a widget, if you want to build a TV or a toaster oven, you got two choices. You can load an operating system on there that you know works, and you can customize that operating system. And then since you're running that operating system, well, now you don't have to write a Netflix app. There's one on the Google App Store that you can just install on your TV, and Netflix will update it for you when there's updates because Netflix writes that app, right?
Right.
So I keep using Netflix as an example, but it could be for anything, right?
Right, right.
So, you know, if you plug it into a interchanging, ever-evolving operating system, into ever-changing host platform, Netflix has to continue to update and innovate to make their product viable, which means that their app has to update.
Right. Yeah.
So if you're running an operating system, you're going to need a reboot.
Yeah. But see, to me, that seems like common knowledge, no? Like, are there a lot? I mean, your clientele probably is, they're like, I just, you know, I want to turn the key and have the engine run. I don't want to know how, why, or what's going on. So I just want it to work.
That's the biggest problem in our industry. There's a few things. Hmm. One thing is people say, well, I just want it simple. I just want it simple. Right. Just make it simple. And when I hear that, a lot of times I'm thinking, maybe that's their way of just saying, I don't want to spend a lot of money, which is the inverse.
Right.
Because there's two types of simple. They're simple in design, and things that are simple in design are typically complicated to use. And then there's complicated in design, and hopefully that complexity has made it very simple to use. And I'm a car guy, so my favorite analogy is an automatic transmission and a manual transmission. If you take apart a manual transmission, it doesn't look that much more complicated than a 10-speed bicycle.
Right.
You look at it, you go, oh, I can see how that works. It's not that hard. But to use it, you got to use a clutch and you got to shift yourself and you got to downshift and upshift. And it's simple in design, but it's complicated to use. Now, an automatic transmission, press the button, put it in D, and you are good to go. Nothing to think about. Right. But that transmission in that car is the single most complicated piece of equipment in that vehicle and probably the most expensive, even more so than the engine. And it's more expensive, typically more expensive than the engine, definitely more complicated. If your transmission goes, you probably throw your car away. And it has 8 computers that run it.
But you just nowadays.
You just put it in D. That's it. I just put it in D and drive. Yep. So that's the kind of the back and forth. So I do believe people truly want it simple. And to make things simple to use, you have to write a lot of software. And you have to really, really, and even no matter how good you are at coding, you know, the first few you do, we tend to write software of things that we know that we can do. Oh, if I have a command to do this, I'll implement that feature. So what we really found out is as you learn to program, you become worse at a user interface, right? Because you're like, oh, I have a command to do that, so I'll give them that feature.
Right.
It might not be exactly the feature they want. So it's really interesting to have people describe features to you that don't understand anything about programming or coding.
Okay.
And take those features and take a lot of them and then kind of distill them down into something that you should write code for, right? An example is people say, can I just have one button? Can I just have one button? I just want to press a button. Okay, great. I can give you that. That means you only want to do one thing. You only want to do one thing? No. Can you give me another button for this other thing? Well, now you've just negated your first statement of I only just want one button.
Right.
So, you know, how do we, you know, we came up with a thing called the rule of 99%, where what happens is when you press that button, a bunch of things happen and something different happens, but it's probably the thing that you want. So if you press the button to turn the TV on and it was during the day, probably want the shade to come down. That doesn't need to happen if it's already after sunset.
Wow. Okay.
If I press the button to turn on my lights in the kitchen and it's the middle of the day, it should go to the daytime scene. If I press that same exact button, you know, in the morning, it should go to the morning scene. And if I press that button at 3 o'clock in the morning, it should go into midnight sack scene. But it's one button.
Yeah.
So making buttons do multiple things, but the thing that you want based on, hey, are you home? Are you away? Is the sun up? Is the sun down? Is the TV on? Is it summer? Is it winter? We can just run through a bunch of those Boolean variables and kind of give you the magic answer. Right? And I call it the rule of 99% because 99% of the time when you press that button, it's going to do the thing that you want at that time.
Wow. that is, so I'm in the middle right now of experimenting as a DIY guy with Roomy Remote, which is so far below everything you're talking about, but that's what guys like me are trying to emulate that stuff. Right. And we're trying to get to that point where can I do this? Can I, you know, even, you know, have one, but I hit play and my lights dim. I'm excited about that because I'm doing that right now. But what you're doing is one, you're doing that, but then that entire business model, because this stuff is, like you said, the updates, this, that things go wrong all the time in home theater. And how you answer that to your customers, it's, up until I read that article, I would say it was unheard of in home theater. And
how well, we're not only doing it for the home theater, we're doing it for the whole house, right?
Right, right. Your home, yeah. I'm looking at it from a home theater perspective. Yeah. You're doing it from the whole home thing. But
here's what we like to say to customers. I like to say this to other dealers. And everybody that's working in your home, your plumber, your electrician, your integrator, they just want to finish. They're like, oh my God, can I get back in? Are the floors down? Can I get my rack in there? I did my pre-wire. I did my pre-construction boxes. I want to get in and finish the job so I can get paid, right? That doesn't make anybody a bad person. And what I like to tell people is my job begins once the installation is finished. So I've finished the installation. My team has gone through your home. I've sat and said, walked you into every room and showed you, hey, this is how it works. What do you think? Isn't this cool? And you, in the previous, in the traditional way, what would happen then is I would say, hey, is there anything special you wanted to do? Do you want the lights to come on at dusk or something? Or, you know, do you want your favorite radio station set? What do you want me to do? I'm here and I'm finishing up and everything works and I can sprinkle some of that stuff in right now if you'd like. And it's basically like putting a gun to the guy's head, person's head, and saying, tell me now what you want this thing that you've never had in your life to do, that you don't even know what it can do. So that's, we don't mean to be evil.
It doesn't sound evil to me.
but that's not in the, like, we're like, hey, we're here. Let's, you wanted to do, everything's working, so we can sprinkle some extra stuff in there, right? The problem is without that customization, it's not a smart house. You could have the most expensive Crestron, Lutron, Savant, Control, I don't care how many hundreds of thousands of dollars you spend on the best gear in the world. At that point, it's not a smart house. Those manufacturers do not call themselves smart home manufacturers. They call themselves control platforms. So all you did is you got control, which is no different than back in the 90s, meaning you got a universal remote control for your house. It just happens to be on an app, right? And having control of something by no way makes it smart or intelligent. It's just a remote control.
Right. That gets back to your analogy of the automatic versus the, you know, manual transmission.
Yeah.
Like, I have a remote. I have a Harmony Elite. I'm using the Roomy remote. The smarts are in me. I've got to hit the one. I had to program the thing, but two, I have to hit the correct button for the situation that I want. I'm the one using the smarts. Right. Your homes are taking all the thinking out of me.
Yes.
And I'm not that bright, so there's not much to take. So.
I'm sure that's not the case. But here's the thing is what we offer clients currently, you know, is death by a thousand apps. I mean, there's an app for that is the worst thing that's ever been said about a smart home. Right? There's an app for that. It just, I'm so tired of hearing that because, you know, oh, there's an app for your shades. Oh, so you have to be home, have your app open, and then press a button for the shades. How did your babysitter deal with that while you're out to dinner with your spouse for a lucky one night out? You know, like you have, like now it's the responsibility is on you to do that instead of on the house to do that. Like that sounds like we've gone backwards.
I love the fact that you're like, come on, your house can't think when you're away. To you, that's common knowledge. To me, I'm like, how am I getting this?
But if you got motorized shades put in your house in 1985, right, there's a button on the wall.
Right.
There's no app for that because the apps didn't exist.
Right.
But you didn't have to tell anybody how to put the shades up and down. There was a toggle switch on the wall that said up and down.
Yeah, it's like a light switch. I know how to turn the light on. It's not a smart light. It's got a switch. And I'm the smart.
We've added all this smarts to stuff. And we've taken what was kind of a clunky, the old mechanical way of controlling lights was kind of clunky. Big old gang of switches. Sometimes up is on and sometimes up is off, depending on the switch on the other side. We're like, oh, we'll make that a whole lot better by putting in an app. That didn't make it better. It made it worse.
Yeah, because now you need the app. And it's like... And
the app has to be updated and you have to be home and you have to know that app and you have to have the username and password. Like, you know,
yeah.
A stranger should be able to come over your home, didn't bring their phone with them and should be able to use everything in your house with no instruction.
Should be. Not the scenario I'm under.
That's the goal. The goal is that somebody with When I say, hey, let me show you how the system works. And when they say, oh, let me write this down. Stop. You need to take notes on this. I didn't do my job right.
Wow. And I'm not good at taking notes. Yeah.
Here's the thing is, if you want to read something, be a do-it-yourselfer. You get to read everything.
Right.
If I'm going to provide you a professional product, you should have professional results. And a professional results means you don't have to remember what to do right or wrong. You can't press a button to break something, right? Oh, am I press this? Am I going to hurt something? There's no button you can press that will break anything in my world.
So now, so many questions. I love the part where you talk about, in the article anyways, where you're talking about the people have fear of this. Because once you have something like this installed and you do need an update, or something isn't working the way you want, or you, one of yours was like, I'd like a different scene and you can't get the phone call. You know what I mean? And it's like, how do you get your integrator back after the fact? And what you've done is you've turned that on its head. Like you said, it's like your job starts once everything's in, which is the complete reverse of how business has been done with this. And what's been, guys like me have been hesitant about even getting into having an integrator or installer.
So here's the dirty secret of the industry. And once again, I'm afraid that non-integrators are going to hear this and think that we are, you know, like politicians or bankers, and we're doing something wrong and we know it. We're doing something wrong and we don't know it. And here's the dirty secrets of the industry. What do you think the average satisfaction rate is of a customer that buys a professional integration system from any products after 12 months? What do you think the percentage of satisfaction rate?
Knowing the I would guess
from 0 to 100%.
I'd say 50 to 60%.
Okay, you'd be high.
Really?
It's around 40.
Okay, I wasn't that far off. But I'm just thinking.
What do you think the satisfaction rate of that same customer is after 5 years?
Oh, they're done with the products. I would guess, honestly, because I think, and it's not the products. I think a lot of people get frustrated because it is hard to get people to. Get people back. You know what I mean? I know you know what I mean, but
yeah. What do you think of the top five complaints in the US that clients have about integrators? What do you think the number one complaint is? And it's larger than 2, 3, 4, and 5 combined.
The number one complaint?
You already said it.
It's getting them back, getting somebody to help.
Making anybody return my phone call.
Yeah, getting somebody to help you. Yeah.
So here's the dirty secret of the industry. You can go shop at 5, 10 integrators, right? And mind you, I'm assuming that you're using professional guys, not trunk slammers, guys that have been in the business, you know, that are vetted. Every one of them, including me, will say to you, if you have a problem with this system, you call me. But statistically speaking, we're all lying. Because if every one of us said, if you have a problem, I'm going to be there, but the number one biggest complaint, bigger than complaint 2, 3, 4, and 5 combined, is I can't get anybody back or I can't get anybody to return my phone call, we're lying. Statistically speaking.
Right.
So if you bought an iPhone, I don't care whether you're an iPhone or an Android, but if you bought an iPhone, and you went over to the Apple store and you said, show me the models, show me the colors, let me pick a case. And I got the perfect phone that I wanted. And then the salesperson said to you, tell me every app you like. I'm going to put those all on there. Tell me all your usernames, passwords. I'm going to type them in. Tell me how you'd like them all arranged. I'm going to set your whole phone up for you. I'm going to activate it with the carrier. I'm going to do everything for you. And they handed it to you and said, is this the way you want it? Is this everything you told? Yeah, that's That's really great. Thank you. I appreciate that. You paid them for the phone. If you could not update, remove, manipulate, add, or change the username and password on anything on that device, what do you think your satisfaction rate would be with that phone? What do you think the percentage of satisfied customers would be in the phone after 12 months?
Pretty low.
You can see where you're going. It'd probably be around 40%. And what do you think their happiness rate would be after 5 years? 17, which is the industry satisfaction rate of an automation system after 5 years. Because it's, we treat our customers the same way, we interact with our customers the same way that plumbers and electricians and your refrigerator guy, right? You go down, you buy a refrigerator. You're like, I want a refrigerator. I want a good one. I buy the thing. It gets delivered. It gets installed. It gets hooked up. And you will never remember the name of that refrigerator guy ever again. He could have done a great job, but you plan on never, ever, ever talking to that person again. Same with your electrician. Same with your plumber. Your plumber, the guy that paved your driveway, could be a fantastic guy and unbelievable at his craft. You're never calling him again. You did a good job.
Right.
Maybe you're calling him in a decade or two. But our industry doesn't work like that. And we do not lead with, we live in the world of updates and reboots. And if you put this system in your house, you have a 17% chance of being happy after spending maybe six figures, definitely five. You're going to spend six figures with me, and you have a 17% chance of being happy after 5 years. So when I meet a brand new customer, I tell them this and I say, so do you feel lucky? You ready to roll the dice? And they're like, well, wait a minute. Maybe we shouldn't do anything at all. Maybe we should do it ourselves. Well, if you do it yourself, you actually have all the same exact problems, if not worse.
Oh, yeah.
You're just becoming the CTO of your home. And maybe you want that job and maybe you don't. But as homes and families get larger and people, as more things become important to people in their life, you know, then you don't want to be the CTO of your home. When you come home from your house, you don't want to work on it. You want to live in your home and enjoy your home.
Yeah.
Not for everybody, but most people.
Yeah.
So we say that our job begins when we finish the install. And my last analogy on this is in the traditional model, what would happen is we would finish the system, customer would be happy, he'd write us that last check, take all the guys out for beers at the bar. The guys are happy, they feel like they did work, and I'm buying the first two rounds. I got paid, customer's happy, maybe even wrote us a review. Life is good. I go home, wake up in the morning and I'm drinking my cup of coffee and I look at my email and there's an email from the client and usually says, hey, could you do this custom scene for me and you could change the codes on the door locks and, you know, could you program this and could you program that? And at that point, I have three options. I can send them an invoice for what that work would cost. However, I will then immediately alienate a brand new customer who said, I just spent all this money with this guy. He won't do this for me. And I'm training, and I train them never to email me again because he's just going to get a bill.
Right.
And if I don't, option two is I could do the work for free. And if I do the work for free, I'm now giving up the single most valuable asset that I have in my organization, because selling parts is not the single most large asset. It's not the thing that makes us unbelievably unique. It's writing programming and programming your home better than anybody else could, no matter how hard a do-it-yourselfer tries. Because a do-it-yourselfer, a do-it-yourself mechanic could never compete with somebody, a team of people that's been doing it every single day for 30 years.
Yeah.
You just do it. It's not, it wouldn't be reasonable.
Right. And it's your time too. I mean, to sum it all up, it's your time.
And then option three is I could delete the email. And I say the only honest option is to delete the email and pretend it never got it.
Yeah.
Now you're not asking the customer to pay for anything, pissing them off, and you're not doing any work for free. And that's where it begins. That's where it begins, right? Because immediately we put hundreds of components in homes. Heck, light bulbs need firmware updates these days, right? It's crazy. So we put these systems in, we monitor them, and what we tell customers is don't pay us for most of the parts. We charge them for all the install and the labor and the programming, but you know, the rack of equipment and the networking throughout the home and the touch panels throughout the home and probably even the televisions are leased.
What got us. That's what, like, the home theater, we read that and we're like, because we'd been talking about it in through my podcast and with a bunch of different people, like, why isn't leasing home theater gear, for instance, more of a thing? Because it's like what you're doing, that you're like, it's the same thing. It's the tech. Why can't more people think like you? But it takes a commitment. And I mean, you did, you financed it yourself. It looks like it's paid off, right? I mean,
you started doing this about 8 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, I definitely made a lot of mistakes.
Well, yeah, hopefully you learn from them.
I have to say, I'm super lucky and super grateful. More things, it had more advantages than I ever imagined. So yeah, there were some things that didn't work out and we didn't do right. We had to adjust and tweak. But so many other things happened that were amazing that I never counted on. So service, right? Service is supposed to be a profit center for a company. It's supposed to be, right? Because if we're not profiting on it, we're losing money. And if we're not losing money, if we're losing money, eventually we're not in business.
Right.
That's the way it is. And everybody says, well, what about warranties? Yeah, warranties come from the manufacturer on the part.
Right.
And they don't pay for our time. So they say, well, the client says, well, this part's under warranty. Sure, but you still have to. And if it is, I can go to your house. I can send a technician. We have to send a technician that's certified in that product. That technician can try to diagnose it themselves. They can't get it working. They can call the manufacturer. The manufacturer will then verify that they've checked everything. And if it's under warranty, they will then at that point issue an RA. And they may even be good enough to send an advanced exchange. Say, hey, you don't have to ship the old one back. We'll ship you a new one and you ship the old one back. That's if they're kind. And a lot of them do that. But then I have to come back and install that part another day, don't I?
Yeah. And then we go with time again.
So our industry has either said, well, we're either going to lose money. That's bad for everybody. They'll just do it, lose money. Or they've said, well, this is service and service is a profit center, which it should be. But the least efficient you are in service, the more money you make. Everybody bills by the hour, right?
Oh, yeah.
So think about it, right? You go to a customer's house, they have no picture on their TV. You're like, maybe it's the AVR. Maybe it's the Balun. I'm not sure. We've done some remote work. We sent the guy there with the parts. He calls me up and he says, yeah, Keith, you're right. It was the AVR. That was an old one. I brought a new one with me. I plugged it in. It's working great now. What do I do? Or maybe he says he hasn't even plugged in the AVR. Sorry, bad example. The old one's definitely bad. I bypassed it and we're good. Do I put the new one in? Hold on. I'll call you right back. Boom. Call the client. Ray, they're not on a Zoom call and I can get them and say, hey, it was the part that was bad. Do you want to buy a new one? We have one with us. And if you get an answer and you get a yes and this and that, he might not call you, that person may not call you back for a half an hour or an hour.
Right.
Your tech is sitting there with his thumb up his butt, but the clock is ticking.
Yep.
And what happens is then your client calls you up and says, how come it took your tech 3 hours to change an AVR? I don't want to pay 3 hours for that. They should have been able to do that in 1 to 2 tops.
Yeah.
Including all the control system reprogramming, right? Or even whatever they think, even if it's true or not, you've spent more time. You were inefficient. And if you tell the customer, well, I sat there waiting for you to call back, I'm not paying for that. You weren't working. I'm not paying you to not work. The guy should have taken lunch. He should have done something. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. Either way, that inefficiency, if the client just pays you, you got paid to be inefficient. And then you learn the hard way. You learned a bad rule. You learned inefficiency is profitable. Not particularly fair.
Right.
But the client is in our way of making them happy. So that's the way we used to do it. And now we're like, hey, that part is leased. We're going to go, we're going to take that one out, and we're going to either fix it, we're either going to get it working, or we're going to put one in that's working. And the more efficiently I can do that, I'm not charging the customer hourly anymore anyway. They're just paying me as a service fee on top of the lease. So you pay me for the parts, and then you pay me for my service. But you didn't have to lay the money out for the parts up front. We charge 0% interest, right? So if you have $36,000 worth of parts for me, you're paying me $1,000 a month for 3 years, plus a service fee on top of that. And that service fee includes all your custom programming, a portal that you can log into that you can make requests to do any custom programming you want. You get 1 hour of custom programming per month. And by the way, that's a good amount. We also want to see you trickle it in over time so you can get used to all these things and understand it. And you should use every hour every month, please. We also include so many site visits per year. But this all comes down to the fact that when a part goes bad, we get notified that part went bad because it didn't. We have a system that kind of monitors it. We're like, oh, that fell offline. We know, hopefully before the client knows.
Wow.
We create a ticket in our system. Our in-house technicians will go in and try to reboot it. We'll try to firmware update it. We will try to tickle and do whatever we can do to it remotely. And if we still can't get it, then we just tell the customer, we're on our way and we're coming over.
Now, have you ever had
really,
like where you
do all that without the customer ever knowing it went wrong?
That's what I was just going to say. Do you get a lot of like, you're going to have a problem soon, so we're on our way. And they're like, what? Like they didn't even know they had a problem.
If you go to use your theater, it's not going to work because we can see the AVR offline.
Oh, okay.
We can see your Apple TV isn't pinging back.
Yeah.
Right, we can tell your Kaleidoscape has a failed hard drive. You know? So we can tell the temperature of something is too hot because most of this stuff has all that stuff inside. If you use professional grade product, install sensors, that information is all reported back if you know how to collect it.
Right. Do you ever run into people not wanting you to have that information, or is everybody pretty much accept? I know people in my life that are like that, but they wouldn't be getting this product in the first place. But have you ever been pitching this and then have people go, well, that's just too much. I don't want you to know. Like,
actually,
what?
I get it the other way around.
Oh, really?
So, you know, I had a phone call with a client today. He said, you know, your thermostat's a little more, it's like $100 more per thermostat. I said, yes, but it's not owned by Al-Qaeda. It's not a Trojan horse into your home trying to collect information.
Right.
I mean, let's be honest. If you buy a Nest product, you are buying a product that's being sold to you at a loss. Nest lost almost $1 billion last year. The division of Amazon Alexa lost $3 billion. And this is an acceptable price to pay for more information about you.
Right. Oh, everything's getting information on us. It's ridiculous.
Right. So the fact that I know the temperature of your AVR,
right,
or the micro or the CPU usage or the RAM uses of the controller that's running your home, I guess I personally don't think that that is, I don't think that's personal data. I think that's equipment data. Whereas one simple Nest product in your home transmits absolute data about you and your family.
Yep. Oh yeah.
So I think, you know, we believe in privacy and security. I can't control your privacy. That's up to you. You can choose to be on Facebook or not to be on Facebook. That's up to you, right?
Right.
The privacy of the network and the privacy of the home automation system, that's our responsibility.
Yeah.
And we give our customers a document saying, these are our expectations. These are, should be are your expectations of security.
Right. And that's why I asked, because I've had the conversation with people about privacy and stuff. And like, I don't like giving out my information like that. And I'm like, and I've used this one with people. I go, do yourself a favor. I go, look at your phone in the next few days after I say Raggedy Ann and Andy. And then just tell me how many times you see that on your phone in the next few days where you'd never see that. And they're like, what are you talking about? And it'll show up, you know, stuff like it always, everybody's watching you. Or your gear, your phones, your, like you said, Nest equipment, where you're, whatever you're doing. And that's why I was asking you, is because you are the more private way of doing it. It's just that people don't want to know that it's, you know what I mean? It's like, it's different when it's, I don't know those people.
Well, think about it. If you're like, I'm going to make my Alexa talk to my whatever, my home automation platform. If I asked you for your Google username and password, you're surely not going to give it to me. And you're definitely not going to give it to me on this podcast. But you will type in your Google username and password into Amazon's app.
Right.
For your Google device. And you've just given that you so that Amazon can use your username and password and log in as you into that product. Yeah. That's frightening. That is absolutely frightening. But let me dumb it down, because that's privacy. Let's talk about security, right? Because security is a little simpler and they get conflated a lot. So security is how secure is the network in your home? And yes, Wi-Fi encryption is part of it, but, you know, there's a router, a network switch, a wireless controller, various wireless access points, a camera recording system, a whole bunch of cameras. Your automation platform, your lighting platform, your shading platform, there's all this stuff plugged into the network. And not so much anymore, but it was very common in the past when people say, well, I want to have remote access to my cameras, or I want to have remote access to my home. And that was done through something called port forwarding, basically open up ports on a router. And that is just flat out a bad idea and been massively shunned by the Department of Homeland Security. So it's not a Google search on this. This is right, because you're basically, not only are you leaving the door unlocked to your home, but you're leaving it open and you're sending out a balloon to the world saying, right here, we're open. Right here, this is the address.
Right. You know?
So that's a bad idea. And less devices use that now, so now they go through a cloud authentication. But then that cloud, is that a cloud that's trying to collect data on you? Is that an anonymous cloud? How's that work? We think this network, the security is paramount. We highly do not believe in device level management, right? So you hire some company to set up your network, right? And by default, they're the admin, right? Now you could say, hey, before you leave, let me get on your, you know, log into, type in the username and password on my laptop, and then I'm going to go change them all, right? You could do that. But then you would negate their ability to help you in the future. right? They would not be able to help you remotely if you needed help with something, right?
Right.
That's in it. Device level management, where it's like, you know, admin password. We try to not use devices like that at all. We like user level management, where the device gets plugged in, it goes out to a server, and it says, these email addresses and passwords are allowed users. And when you go to log in, you type in your email address and password, it goes out to the server and checks that you're on the list, and it says, that's right, you're good, right? Mm-hmm. Because any company like myself, we manage about 450 systems currently. Each one of those systems has 10 to 20 usernames and passwords. Should that mean that if I fire an employee, I should log into 250 times 20 devices and change all the usernames and passwords? I should.
Yeah, you should.
I'd be responsible, but that's not what gets done. You know, so when you're shopping for integrators, you should say, what's your policy of usernames and passwords as you hire and as employees come and go? It's not reasonable to expect a small company to change thousands of usernames and passwords every time they hire and fire.
No,
so the only logical way to do it would be user level management, where you go to the server, you delete that username and password, and then they've lost access to all those devices.
Yeah.
And if you don't do that for your clients, you're not truly giving them security.
Right.
You're not. Because you just don't know what that other employee is going to do. And they could be the greatest person in the world with no malintent, but you should, as you know, that's not secure. Security isn't, well, I trust that guy. That's not security.
Right.
You know, even if you do.
Well, yeah, it's like, I mean, it's kind of like conflict of interest, right? The definition of it. It's all really what you're talking about. It's like, you know, it's like, yeah, I trust them. But it doesn't mean that's secure. It takes that out of the equation. You don't have to trust them because it's now secure because you have a way of, okay, there's, you know, I can delete this. I can do, you know, you can manage that in a way that makes the customer feel better. I mean, it makes everything more secure. I mean, I never even thought of that part of it. And it's like, do you have a lot of customers asking you that, or do you bring that up to them?
I bring it up. It's not apparent to most people. They're like, yeah, what's the password for this? You know, and I'm like, I can make you a user if you'd like.
Right.
The great thing is if a client wants to make changes and wants to be a user, no problem. I know. It records what every single person did and whatever, you know, so I can see... Oh, that client made some changes that he shouldn't have made. You know?
So how many clients think they're great at it and it's really you in the background going, nope, that's wrong, and changing it?
Oh, you know, it's at least I can then have the conversation.
Yeah.
User level management for devices makes sense. User level management with two-factor authentication makes even more sense. And that's what we do. So and what's also interesting about that is you know, it's really easy to see who did what, when, where, and how. Mm-hmm. Not that anybody's doing evil, but, you know, how can you manage a company and get your employees to do better or their best work? How can they evolve? You can't see what they're doing. And I'm not going to hang over their shoulders all day long.
Mm. Yeah. It's funny. Here's the funny thing. I paint cars for a living. I've been doing it for 26 years and I paint bumpers on site, completely different than what most people are used to. They think you get a scuff on your bumper, you got to take it to a body shop and have them take the bumper off and repaint the whole thing and then give it back to you. And I can do it. I can come to your house. I can do it on site and have you never lose your car. And I'm back there. You know, I'm in your driveway for 2 hours. Probably three, because people love to hang out and talk and chat about what they did, how they got the damage and mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah. Right. So that's why when I was reading this article, I'm like, we're so much alike, different industries, but our mentalities are exactly the same. You're a service person. You want to keep that customer happy. That's what my That's what I do. And like what you said before in that, it's, the customers don't realize, like, I just want this to work. I don't want to talk to anybody or anything like that, but they don't realize that they're going to need you later. And they just want their system to work. When I leave somebody's driveway and they're like, oh, great job, DJ. I hope I never see you again.
We'll never see you. Yeah.
It's very different. A month later, oh my God, I did it again. And I'm there. I'm, you know, those are all like, those are the customers. They don't, until they realize
something. You should get them on a subscription program. Listen, you get 4 a year. Just pay me this much a month.
That's, I've messed with that idea. And that's why I was like so amazed by your article, because the article about you is, I'm like, just like, oh my God. I'm like, I mean, one, it's great for home theater. It's great for integration. It's great for all of this, but it meshes with my idea.
So I'll be clear. Like, we typically don't, like, speakers, we wouldn't lease. Mm-hmm. Projection screen, we wouldn't lease, you know, the seats, we wouldn't lease, the carpet, we wouldn't lease.
No, they don't lease the brakes on your car either. So,
but you lease your car.
Correct. Yeah.
You lease your car. So this world of updates, software updates and reboots is actually, it's increasing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because more devices are smart than were in the past. The level of innovation, you know, the need to innovate, to compete, is very high pressure by these manufacturers. So, you know, it's just, think about it. We've come to the realization that we know if we buy a new part, that it's not going to work right until you get the first firmware update. We just accept it.
Yeah. It's like
iOS 16 came out. I'm waiting until 16.1. Grandpa tells you that.
Yeah, exactly. Because that, like, no, it's the early adopters are like, and if you have that moniker as an early adopter, you're like, wow, you're brave.
Yeah. Like,
you know.
Yeah. So we've come to accept that as a society, but yet if I did an awesome Wi-Fi system, and like good Wi-Fi for big home professional, it can cost a lot of money. You can drop $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000, right? No big deal, right? You know,
well,
not hard. It's not hard, mind you, installed, wired, programmed. You know,
right?
And if you dropped $20,000 with me for Wi-Fi for your mansion a year and a half ago. And I called you up and said, hey, man, how's that Wi-Fi system? Still working great, man. Awesome. Fantastic. By the way, you're on Wi-Fi 5. There's Wi-Fi 6 and Wi-Fi 6E now. Why don't we take that stuff out and put in new stuff? The guy would slam the phone down and never speak to me again. You're an asshole.
Right.
You know, you rip me like they're furious. Apple comes out with a new phone every year. Nobody gets upset. Car manufacturers come out with a new car every year. Nobody gets upset. But when I tell somebody that a piece of technology that I installed in their home is now obsolete in the tech world, I used to just, people would just, they would hate me. And like,
yeah.
What did you expect? You know, but you know, I can't change how they feel. So I changed how I acted. And I'll give you one last quick thing on it. This was the thing that put me over the edge. We did a job for a client. Their old dealer had left and the system had gotten old, and we did kind of a refresh. It was $30,000 or $40,000. And we cleaned it all up and modernized it. And this was about a decade ago before we were doing leasing. And we left and said, hey, we're happy, we get paid, life is good. And I was doing a demonstration in my showroom for another client. This is about 20 months later, right? The client called in and said, you know, the two words that every client always says, whether it's true or not, nothing works, right? And in the case, this client, she was right. Nothing was working. I was not involved with the call. The call went from my office manager who answers the phone to my in-house help desk person. Who we keep at a desk, not in the field, so that they can work on things like this and pre-program stuff. And he took the call and he, you know, had to take some pictures and they figured some stuff out. And he's like, yep, looks like your router has failed. Not totally surprised. We've seen some of those go after they get a little older and blah, blah, blah. Hold on. Let me see what we can do. Give it back to my office manager, who's not a salesperson. And he said, you know, we have the same tech who worked at your house 2 miles away from your house right now. He happens to have that part you need because he has it for another job that he's doing tomorrow. And we can, you can, we have another one, so he can use that one for your house. I don't know what you paid for it, but we're going to charge you the same price that you paid for originally, but you're going to get the newer version. And our standard service call for a technician to come out and do this work, our standard service call rate for a half a day at that time was, you know, $449. And she lost her mind after being very calm and very, she was wonderful. So much that they went and grabbed me out of the showroom, dragged me next door into our office, put me on the phone with the client where I just repeated the same thing. Well, isn't this under warranty? It's a 12-month, that part had a 12-month warranty. It's 20 months ago. It's not close.
Yeah.
I can't, there's nothing for me to argue here with the manufacturer. And I know that manufacturer, they're a pain in the ass. That's why I don't deal with that one anymore. But, and she said, fine, send him. Slammed down the phone. And I went to bed that night and I said, you know what? I quit. I give up. I'm closing my doors because we could have never done better. My team did what they were supposed to. They answered the phone, the four calls, went to the tech. We happened to have a guy there. He happened to have the right part with him. We would have never gotten that lucky. And it still didn't make the customer happy. So I sent my guy into a shitty situation. The customer's pissed at us. My team is upset. I'm going to send a bill and probably not going to get paid. Everybody loses. And I said, if I don't change this, this is going to happen again. And we won't even be able to do as good as that.
Right.
You know? And that's when I decided she didn't have a problem with things breaking. She didn't have a problem because we answered the phone. We did all these other things. As soon as we started talking price, that's when there was a problem. And I get it because you're like, I just spent a lot of money on this. And every time you buy something, especially when it's expensive, you feel like you just bought it. She's like, we just got this. And I was like, actually, it was 20 months ago.
Right. So let me ask, can we get into some of the like little detail, little nitty gritty on like pricing and stuff? Just not actual pricing, but I know some, but because I don't... It's way too complicated to get into all of it, but overall, right? So you used to charge a certain price to come out, install one, done. And then you were trying to give the best service you could. And in that example you just laid out, it's, and I know it's super frustrating when you're doing, you think you've done everything right. You've answered all the questions. It's like, what more can I do to satisfy you? And the thing is they want the price gone. And you're like, well, I have a business here. So you answered that by chain. You didn't close your doors.
No.
Obviously, we're here. So
how that would go down today, right, would be radically different.
Correct. And what you, but my question is, now, did you actually come down in like, say, okay, like I'm going to, like it amazes me how you're pulling this off, because it's like your service that you're providing to people is so great, but then at the same time, and it's like people are just paying that monthly fee and they're getting along, and you guys are happy to go out there because the money's coming in, you have a sustained cash flow. It's both sides are really making out on this, meaning the business and the customers. So did you like drop your prices so that you could add in the service fee, or like, how did you manipulate that? Because you still have to pay for all that equipment.
So, yeah, I mean, if for simple math, if it was a $100,000 project, well, you might pay me, I might finance, let's say $36,000 of it. Right? Okay. I'll lease you $36,000 worth of equipment. And I'm just making up an easy number.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Routers, video switches, audio switches, amplifiers, controllers, touch panels, televisions, you know, Wi-Fi, racking, all that stuff. Well, you owe me 36 grand, which means you didn't pay me 100. You pay me 100 minus 36, right?
Right.
So I'm gonna, you're gonna owe me $1,000 a month for the next 3 years, right? Easy.
Okay.
But you do, when you, if you lease your phone, you have to get AppleCare. You can't lease a phone from Apple without getting AppleCare. You can't lease your car or finance your car without getting full coverage on insurance.
Right.
And nobody will lease you a vehicle out of warranty. And maybe that's wrong, but in general, that's kind of the way it works.
Right. So
because you want the vehicle to be maintained by the person that actually owns it. And that's the dealership, and the bank, not correct.
And that's why I wanted to ask you. So that's a great, and I've done this with people. Like there's jobs I'll do on higher end models when we get into, like, if I have to do a Ferrari or a Lamborghini. And you don't, like, if I showed you up to your house to do a Toyota, which great cars, don't get me wrong, but it's your daily driver and you scuffed it and, or your Mustang, right? And you scuffed it and you're like, oh, my baby, I can come out there and you won't even know that anything was done to it. No damage whatsoever. And I'm in, I'm out, boom, you pay me, I'm gone. You never have to see me until you scuff it again, which I'll see you in a few weeks. But if I'm doing a Ferrari, a Lamborghini, a Rolls Royce, you're doing something of a high end, I got to come out, I got to do it, come back, do it, you know, sand it, put another coat on it, come back, buff it. There's a lot more to it. And my customers are like, well, oh, this is great. I'm like, no, don't pay me. Because I won't come back. And that's where I get into. So that's why I asked you. And you're like, so you do a $100,000 system and integrators will do a $100,000 system. And people are expecting that that comes with the service as well, but that's not in there. And it's like, you're off to, and it's a, you're 100% right. You're not wrong. You're off to the next job to do the next $100,000 system. That's how you have to make a living. You have to keep that, your doors open. Yeah. But the customer on the other side is like, well, wait a minute. I just paid $100,000. It's 6 months later. I want a new scene or I want this. Why am I getting charged? I love the idea of what you did. And it's like, now you've taken the hit. You said, like you just said, you'll finance that 36. So the customer's paying 64 where they would have paid 100. But now you have a reason to show up every time because you're getting that $1,000 a month. That's part of the deal.
Right. And then, mind you, that covers the part. Yeah. There is, we call our service program Total Home Up to Date.
There's
five different levels to it. And you have to be on, you know, at least the mid level.
Yep.
Otherwise, I won't lease to you.
Right. Okay.
It's like, you know,
it's not worth it.
If I'm going to put the equipment in your home and I'm going to take payments from you over time, then I need to maintain that equipment and not have to ask you to pay me to maintain equipment that you don't own.
Yeah, it sounds like somebody, they would love that though.
Right.
I mean, you want to do the work? It's like, well, I'm going to maintain everything for you?
Well, I never wanted to get into the situation of, well, something's not working, so I'm not going to make you your lease payment. And I'm going to say, well, if you don't, right, I would never just lease without Total Home Up to Date, because I could, something could stop working and I'd say, okay, well, pay me for a service call and I'll take care of the broken part.
Right.
I never wanted to have that conversation.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to say, you got a broken part? We're there. So that scenario today, the one I told you about before, would go down ideally something like this. The client's router would fail and there is a second one plugged in and online in warm spare mode that has been monitoring the exact configuration of the first router. It has been in a const every 10 minutes or so downloading that updated config, right? Not the config you program, but all the parameters of the house changing. And that secondary router called a warm spare plays Marco Polo. It yells Marco and it hears Polo. So it waits a few more minutes and yells Marco again. And when it doesn't hear Polo, it says, Polo died. Polo died. He's gone. Let me do his job. And he kicks into work.
Yeah.
Takes over. And they can do this so fast. Like you could have Pandora playing and not notice. Right? I've pulled cables on routers and to see if the song would stop playing.
Wow.
And then we get an alert on our end. It notifies us that this has occurred. So we might go in and say, you know, we live in the world of updates and reboots. So, heck, let's try to power cycle the main router, see if it starts saying Polo again. Well, you know, let's do a firmware update. Let's see if it starts saying Polo again. And if it starts saying Polo again, Marco hands the ball back to Polo and life is good and nobody's the wiser. If it didn't, the customer's still up and running and invisible to the problem currently, except for the ticket that we've started in our system that also does notify the client, sees all our notes and conversation. But then we would, reach out to the customer and say, hey, you know, do you have time like next Tuesday for somebody to come by? You're running on a backup part and we want to replace the primary one because if that one goes, then you would be.
Right.
But we don't have to be there today or tomorrow. We can be there next week. It's not a big deal.
Right. Sooner the better, but yeah.
Yeah.
So, and now that's your, like, obviously you're using that example of a router, right? Because that's like your brains of what's going on there.
It's not our brains. It's kind of more like the traffic cop.
That's what I meant. Yeah. But of the house, like for your integration, right? For your eyes and ears to the house, if that goes down, you can't see anything, correct?
Well, and the customer can't get on the internet.
Correct.
Lighting system may not work.
Right.
TVs are definitely not going to work. You know, you can't print.
Right. But you don't have like, you don't have like an AVR standing by, but your router would tell you if like the AVR is going bad, if your Kaleidoscape's going bad or if whatever. Right. So like, you know what I mean? That's why you use the router is that you have a backup.
We have a backup router because from an engineering perspective, it is a single point of failure.
Right.
So if the AVR fails in your home, you don't lose the whole system.
Right.
You lose that room.
Yeah.
Whereas if your router goes down, you've lost everything. Then it doesn't matter if the AVR works or not.
Right.
The AVR can't turn on. In our world, the AVR cannot turn on without network because AVR is in the rack. It's not in the theater. When you pick up that remote, it's sending command.
Right.
Over IP.
Yep.
Over the network to tell the AVR to turn on, to go to this input and go to this volume level. Right. So it's doing all that stuff. So. There are a handful of parts, like in, if you design any, like, hey, cars have spare tires, right? Like, you know.
Right.
If you only have one router in your home and it's your single point of failure and it prevents you from getting internet, then, you know, and you want to provide clients really good customer service, you know, just telling somebody to stay up 24/7 and stand by isn't as good as having a part that does it.
Right.
We also do backup modems, right? Because the modem could just need to be rebooted because that's never happened to anybody, right? So
how do you reboot? Our internet hasn't gone down here.
Right. So how do, you know, so we have a cellular backup. So if the modem fails, it kicks over to cell. We get alerted, right? There's probably something. No, we just failed over.
Right.
We get an alert that somebody's modem has failed, and there's still plenty of internet bandwidth for us to log in, get into the power management system and turn off the plug that's powering the modem for, let's be honest, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So we write a quick script and say, hey, turn power off, wait 10 minutes, turn power back on this plug. And you hope that that modem come back alive and it starts communicating. If not, we just tell the client, listen, your modem's down. You still have internet. You probably can't watch Netflix on every TV at the same time tonight. And we're on our way.
Wow. So all of these little, like you said, you've been doing this 30 years. All of these little fixes, they have to have come from experience, right? Like this, how can I improve this outcome, right? Or this situation, how can I be faster at fixing this situation for the customer?
Here's the thing is most of this stuff existed in a much more mature industry. Like if you look at the networking industry, stuff like this has been going on for a long time. So this stuff all existed. It didn't really happen to trickle into the smart house world because most people that are in the smart home world were afraid of touching the network. That started to change in our industry. But now they're just installing network equipment and think because they sold them the part, it must be good. Or it's really, you have to write a really elaborate kick-ass configuration to get things to do what they need to do. So every time there was here's the thing is if I'm going to bed and I'm worried about every single customer's modem or router failing, it's not a good way to go to sleep.
No, I wouldn't sleep.
And, you know, when I first went full blown into doing smart houses, you know, I did a couple of projects the first year and then a couple more the next year and then more and then more. And I noticed the more projects I had in my rearview mirror that my own success was going to strangle me.
Yeah.
Because as when I decided we are doing smart houses, period, right? This is what we do. We do smart house platforms. The 3 years after that point, when I had a dozen or 20 jobs in my rearview mirror, those people started asking for things, whether it was service or features, upgrades, or customization. They started asking for things. And I realized that I had no way to do that because I was on the next job.
Right.
So I am treating my new customers better than I'm treating my existing customers.
Yep.
And that's why, you know, all of these things added up. And I said, I need to change the way I do business. And automation as a service isn't a new concept, right? Software as a service is a common thing. I wanted to call somebody up and say, hey, you bought Wi-Fi 5 for me a year and a half ago. How would you like to update to Wi-Fi 6 or even Wi-Fi 6E? It's $10 a month per access point more. Or whatever the number, I'm just making it
up. Right.
And in the past, if I made that phone call and I said, why don't you just buy a new Wi-Fi system, write a new check, they would be furious. But now, whether they say yes or no, they're like, no, you know, we're pretty happy with what we have. It works fine. We're good. Or, but thanks. Let me know next time. Or, yeah, that's pretty good. But always use more Wi-Fi.
Yeah, exactly.
Customers will suffer in silence because little things will break over time. You know, if I told you 17% of the people are happy with their automation system after 5 years. So are they really saving money by getting the system to a point after 5 years that they almost have to throw it away or do a massive overhaul and they've lived with a degrading, older, antiquated system? Or do we want to do slow upgrades over time that makes sense and continue to customize that system? I mean, you're going to spend the money either way. One way I think you're going to be a lot happier.
Well, yeah, more consistency too, right? It's Ooh. Like, you know, like you wait the 5 years and then all of a sudden you're like, wow, look at this new system. It's great. Not really. You just waited 5 years between everything. Whereas you go gradually and it's like your system's evolving year after year. And are people getting more accustomed to that? Because that you that that's a years ago, people hated that, like you said earlier. It's like, but now I think people are more accustomed to it.
I have tons of systems out there that are 10 that are teenagers, 10 plus years old, right? And here's the thing is they've been slowly upgraded over time. When I put that system in, Netflix wasn't even really a thing. It was a thing.
Still got delivered to your house in an envelope.
Still DVD, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, you know, we upgrade these systems a bit over time. And, you know, some of the parts are still original. Some of the parts are still, you know, as I said, teenagers. But, and, right, some people, I don't really need much Wi-Fi. I surf the web, I do social media, that's it. Mm. So maybe they're running older Wi-Fi because that was less important to them. Maybe they have older cameras because that wasn't as important an upgrade. But maybe their video quality or their audio services or something else was important to them. Like, you don't just blindly upgrade your entire system. You know, we say, hey, there's these new things out, you know, or people may even call us. They're like, hey, you know what? I think I'd like better cameras. It'd be great. We can update your cameras, you know?
Yeah.
You just updated the parts that were important to you over time. Sometimes we'll tell you, while you're doing that, we really need to change this other part as well, right?
Right.
Maybe that's even included because the new price is the same price as the old.
Right. Yeah. Like, for instance, you update to 4K cameras, I got to rerun some stuff because you don't have the bandwidth to handle that. So you're going to have to, that's going to require other parts to be upgraded.
Oh, hopefully we did our job right. That's not necessary, but you get, yeah.
Just an example.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I want to have continuous conversations with the clients. I mean, it just frustrates me. I've done some houses that I was so proud of and they so great. And then you go back there and then, you know, without this leasing model, somehow I show back up there, you know, 6-7 years later, and so much stuff has been unplugged and abandoned or failed, or, you know, they're no longer, you know, the music stopped working in this room, so they're just listening on an echo. They're listening on a little tiny echo dot.
Right.
And I'm like, you have speakers in this room. Yeah, fine. You know, you got a bad channel on the amp, but you just, you know, they just start laying solutions over top. And next thing you're like, well, this room works differently than this room. That works differently than this room. You've got equipment abandoned. You know, this doesn't feel good, you know?
Right.
And worse than that, then they go, well, we're selling the home. We're selling this. I don't want to put any money into it because we're selling the home, right? And that gets really ugly really fast. I can't tell you. I've been definitely involved with some lawsuits as an expert because of that. Because they'll show the house. Let's say it's a dozen-year-old automation system, lighting and everything. Mm-hmm. They'll show the house and they're like, everything works. But they didn't check everything.
They showed a room that worked.
They showed them a room that worked. I heard some music play. I saw the light turn on and off. It works. We're good. Oh. And I'm assuming, let's assume that nobody's doing anything evil. Let's assume that everybody's on the up and up. Not always the case, but we're making that assumption. So the old homeowner takes out all their cable boxes and gives them back to the cable company. Takes out their cable modem and gives them back to the cable modem. Maybe they take out their kaleidoscape because that was big bucks. And maybe they unplug their old antiquated Roku or Apple TV because they know their usernames and passwords on them. Those things are right. Older anyway. They're not worth a lot of money and they're concerned about some privacy. So they yank those as well. Then the new homeowner buys the home. First thing they do, what's the first thing you do when you buy a new home?
Oh, I have no idea.
Get the internet installed.
Oh yeah. Well, okay.
Yeah. Bye. I need internet. I'm going to be working.
Give me my internet. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Need internet, right? So they call some internet provider. The internet provider comes and sees this rack of equipment that has been a little manhandled lately.
Yeah.
And they go, I don't know how any of this stuff works. I'm bypassing this and plugging in my cable modem, connecting the router, connecting the internet. Here's your Wi-Fi. Connect, you know, they connect right to that. And the automation system, through no fault of anybody, stops working.
Right.
They call us up and they go, can you come and, like, you know, turn it on? Oh. Make it work. And I'll look and I'll say, okay, well, you have a decade-old system that wasn't maintained, that has parts that are failed.
They're missing.
Now somebody has, like, rewired this because, you know, maybe the, oh, I had a guy hang the TV and he took your boxes off the wall. Like, and I'm like, listen, do you want this modern? Do you want this to be a today's system? Or do you want this to be a system from, you know, 2010? Oh no, we want today's system. And I give him an upgrade bill for $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. That's bullshit. I saw this whole thing working. I believe you, and I can get it back to that for not that much money. But next thing they realized that they bought a smart house, and that smart house was actually a liability to the home, not an asset.
Yeah, it gets back to what you were saying. It wasn't a smart house. It could have been
a perfectly good smart house for that other family.
Right.
Back in the day. Right. So our leasing thing works really great with that. So we just meet the new homeowner and say, look, before you close on the home, if you want to transfer the lease over to you, you can. Otherwise, we're just going to take our stuff out.
Oh, okay. So then does that end? Yeah. So what does that do to the current owner, the person selling the house? Does that
transfer the lease?
Oh, they just transfer it to their house, transfer the lease to their new place.
Transfer the lease to the new homeowner.
Okay.
All right. The old homeowner has three options. They can buy the system out for me, include it in the price of the house.
Right.
Right. If they want to, perfectly an option. We could take it out. But okay. Then it wouldn't work during the sale of the house.
Right.
They could transfer the lease to the homeowner. We prefer that. That's my favorite. Because yeah. The old homeowner is probably building a new home that we're going to get a project from. And we've done, you know, we've probably worked really hard on this home for a while. We really like it. We really put, you know, it wasn't something we did once. We've been polishing this system. We touch every system once a month remotely.
And that's what I like. That's what I like. Like, I hear that, and you're just like, just even just that, like what you just said, like, we've worked really hard on this system. Like, you take pride in every system, and like, this is great. Even like when you said earlier, like, I go back to this home and they've had it for a while, and under the other scenario before you did the leasing and everything, people try to problem solve themselves, and it's like, well, I'll just unplug it, right? And I won't use
that. And they start over, or they go back. They're like, I'm just going to put in dumb switches. I'm like, you've got, you know,
right?
Like, I'm just going to put in dumb switches. I'm going to take those switches out and put in new ones. Like, there's $40,000 worth of switches in this house,
right? And they're dumbing it down, and it's like,
and you're going to take them out,
right?
Even if they're 15 years old, they're absolutely fine.
Yeah.
You know, buying a new one doesn't do a whole lot different than the one that you have. And they're in, installed, and work.
Right.
You know? I guarantee, and maybe your home is different, but right now, of all the networking equipment and all your theater equipment and your home audio system and your TVs, probably right now, there's a minimum of a half a dozen firmware updates available of those devices. And I'm not talking phones, iPads, or computers in your home right now.
Oh, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's
so that when we say we touch a home, we're like, oh, yeah, there's a couple updates. Let's schedule those to run at this time. You know, oh, I've got a service call coming up there. next week, I'll have those updates run really early morning the night before we're going there, just in case something goes sideways. We're on our way there. But when my team shows up, they shouldn't have to be doing firmware updates. Those should all be completed before.
Right.
So, I mean, we're one of the ways we're making your home safer is just by keeping on top of everything. It also helps things work better.
What do you guys do for power failure? Do you have UPSs in line for everything, or do you have a bigger system than that? Or
the rack of equipment is on a UPS. Mm-hmm. So, you know, your TVs are not going to be powered up by that unless you have a generator. And if you have a generator, we know your generator. Like, you have a different battery system if you have a generator. But we just use good old-fashioned UPS in the rack that load sheds. So, boom, we see a power failure, right? There's no reason to power the amplifiers, the AVRs,
right,
or the cable boxes. But I do want to leave the network up. I do want to leave the Wi-Fi up. I do want to leave the cameras up. And I do want to leave the camera recording system up. And if you have a generator, I also want to leave up your light controller. If you don't, then I don't have to worry about it because generator's not running anyway. You don't have lights.
Right.
Well, I should load shed as much stuff as possible, physically turn them off so the battery lasts as long as possible.
Oh, so you actually have them connected and then you do the load shed. Not just like it's not. So like in my.
There might be 20 plus. Let's say there's 20 outlets in a rack and each one of them is controlled individually.
And we
program that power strip. So we're like, hey, modem, router, switch, PoE switch, Wi-Fi controller, automation controller, you know, camera recording system, cable box one, cable box two, cable box three, Apple TV one, Apple TV two, Apple TV three, AVR, amplifier. It goes down the line. So as soon as the battery backup detects that there's no power going into it, meaning there was a power failure, for argument's sake, we only leave the top five plugs on.
Right.
When we power down. Because we don't need your AVR on if you don't have power in your house because your projector's not on anyway.
Right. Yeah. I set up my own version with UPSs and same thing. Run everything and then I go around and shut it down. I'm the brains. But I keep the TV running, but the internet, obviously my network is all that requires very little power, so I could keep that running. And then I have a manual generator that I connect to the house, but my living room never shuts down. I keep that. I have a UPS for that, so we don't lose TV. Like, if we lose power in the middle of the day, like, you're not, like, the lights will go out, but my wife will be watching TV and all of a sudden she'll see me running around. And I'm like, I got to get the, and she's like, what happened? I'm like, the power went out. She doesn't know. She's just sitting there watching TV. But that's a lot of running around. It's a lot. I mean, but that sounds, Keith, like I started out when I said, like, started this out saying, like, this is something that I never knew I wanted. Now I want it. And it's, and I've said, and I don't think I can afford it, but I never say never. I mean, my listeners know, it's like, I've wanted a Kaleidoscape since like 2002, whenever they came out. Right. And I got one a year ago. I finally got it. Oh yeah. Yep.
I don't know if you can see it in there. It's a little bit older, but
yeah. Yeah. That's a little, yeah.
I borrowed it from my showroom just cause I wanted to watch a movie.
But I love the idea of dreaming. Right. And it's like, that's what I thought of Kaleidoscape. I never thought I would be able to attain something like that. But then even just hearing your sister, I never thought I'd want an integrator because I like to tinker. I like to do things myself. But the service you're providing is just, it sounds to me amazing. I wish I could afford it right now and be like, get to my house, send a team. This sounds amazing.
I would, there's a lot, not a lot of clients, but there's a percentage of clients that are like yourself that really well read, have done a lot of homework. They're involved. They're enthusiastic. And what's great about them is they want everything. Hey, we want it, right? Because they're into it.
Right. So,
but at the same time, all of a sudden, now it's, you know, the amateur telling the professional how to do things. So that's not the best situation.
No.
So the way I kind of deal with that is, first thing I like to say is if you go take your home theater system, you get your AVR and your amplifiers and your stuff and your TV and you hook it all up, which and most people could do, right?
Yeah. Most of my listeners, yes. Most people, no.
Anybody that wanted to be able to do it, right? It doesn't require any special schooling. You could learn a lot from trial and error.
Yeah.
You don't need a soldering iron or any special tools, right?
Right.
So it's pretty reasonably doable. And when you plug it all in, you make these connections in your head. Ah, the Apple TV plugs into the input that's called DVD, and then the output goes into the TV that's HDMI 3. Right. However, you've laid this out, and maybe the optical cable comes out of the TV and goes into my sound, whatever you got going on, right? However you have it going down, you inherently understand how to use it because you plugged it in.
Right.
When you go to your wife or your kids or your best friend or your spouse, whoever, you're like, yeah, you press this and you do this and you do this, you do this. It's really easy. It's really easy to you because you plugged it in. So you've made these connections in your brain that you see the signal path in your head. Writing software or giving people a user interface, you have to remove that from your brain, which is difficult to do.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And pretend that they don't understand, like there's that it's all one box. It all came in one box. You didn't plug anything in. It should work like it all came in one box.
Yeah.
So, that's an advantage that a professional has. You can't divorce yourself of plugging in the wires if you're an amateur. And that's right. A good thing, right? You're learning, you're understanding, right?
Right.
The other end of it is I like to say my user interfaces kind of have two-pronged approach. So you could pick up a good old-fashioned hard button non-touch panel, you know, non-color remote that I can give you, and you could Archie Bunker your way through watching the TV. You could press the watch with no instructions. You could do it. And if you wanted to use a touch panel remote, you could probably do that with no instructions as well. And if you are the tech person in your house and your spouse is not, great. Your spouse can use the TV with no instructions, rule of 99%, everything works. But you as the tech person, what I would say to you is why you want an integrator is we're going to make everything work. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to drop the consumer level software in front of you, which is almost exactly like the software that we have to program it. And you're going to see true object-oriented program where you see every device, every light switch, every thermostat, every projector, every amplifier, you see every part and every variable of every part in your project. And then you see the same thing on the other sides and you can start connecting things together. You're like, well, wait a minute. I have an option of the third button down on this keypad, not a touch panel, just like a regular light switch. I can make it that if I press the bottom button three times, it'll run this macro and I can drag all these actions into the macro. And it's, you feel like you're using one manufacturer's product, but we've done all the work to bring all those software drivers and connect all those software drivers from all different manufacturers that you can now influence all of the parts in your entire system in every room by just customizing this one software, which you can customize. And if you screw it up, we have a backup copy that we can load remotely, or I can just, and every programming change that you make gets highlighted in a different color.
I could see that coming. It's like I gotta know what this guy's doing.
That we do is grayed out to you. So you can't change it, but we do give you, because we don't want you to be able to change it.
Right.
But every once in a while, a customer will go to our support portal and send us a message and saying, hey, there is this software in this section, and we're trying to do this other thing. Could you remove it? We'll be like, oh, yeah, well, if you're trying to do that other thing, sure, we'll take that out of there for you, no problem. We get to choose to make sure that it won't break anything.
Right, right. That's, you said you have, what, 400 and something projects, homes going?
Well, I mean, we currently manage under our belt, we have 460 some odd registered Gulf War systems.
Wow. Now, that might
be like me asking you, how many bumpers did you paint ever?
Oh my God. I used to know. Not anymore. I'm sure I turned over a lot. It's a little cheaper too. I've turned over a lot more bumpers than that, but a lot more people hitting stuff. So how are my last question is, the manufacturers, I'm guessing, have to like this. I know you've said you've had issues with some. You're using Control 4 now. But with your service and what you're doing, I almost feel like the manufacturers, you're like, nope, I went with Control 4, but others want you. You know what I mean? Because you're managing their stuff and you're actually making their stuff better.
Well, every manufacturer wants a dealer that's going to do a few things, right? If you're a manufacturer and you're going to go to a dealer and say, whether we go to them and say, we'd like to sell your product, or whether they come to us, and both happen. Mind you, there's three automation platforms out there. I think they're all good products. But you know, you could have a whole debate of what does this and what does this. But you don't shop for the groceries, you shop for the chef. That's what I tell anybody that's looking for an automation system. You know, when people call up and they say, well, what's better, Control 4 Crestron, or what's better, Control 4 Savant? You're asking the wrong question.
Okay.
Completely.
Right.
You've completely missed
it. I've asked that question because I'm looking at this stuff. So yeah. That's okay.
Okay. So let me try something.
Okay.
What's the best car to buy?
What do you want to do with it?
Exactly. If you ask a question like that and somebody doesn't ask you a question back, do not believe your answer. If somebody says, what's better, Control 4 or Savant, and they give you either answer, they don't believe what they said.
Thank you. I love that. Yep. No, you're 100% right.
And now the answer is which is better? Hey, look, you know, we're all artists. We paint in software, right?
Yep.
So how do you want to use, are you an artist that you likes to use a brush? Can you do something beautiful with a brush? Absolutely. Could somebody else do something beautiful with chalk or stencil or whatever? These are all just the tools that the professional artist does to create the art for you.
Right now, my listeners are like, he's talking DJ's language. I went to school for art. I always consider what we do in home theater art, podcasting art. It's like, if you're creating something, it's art, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that to hear us, you know, software designer, engineer, whatever you would simplify what you do as, to call an artist, it's like, yeah, it is. And I was thinking that listening earlier, I'm like, yeah, this is an art. It's an art form for what you do. Even your customer service angle, that's an art, right? You have to care about it. And to me, it's like art, the other part of art is the passion, right? And it's like, you wanted to close your doors years ago, but you didn't. You found another way to keep doing what you're doing because that's what you want to do. And that's what you love to do. And it's like, that's what makes it art. And yeah, that's, and I love that. You're like, when somebody asks you what's better, Crestron or Control 4, Savannah, whatever. And it's like, if somebody tells you that's a sales pitch, and don't, and I've said that to people, don't trust. Always understand the angle of the person telling you the answer. You might not be getting the answer you want to hear. You might just be getting what they want you to hear. If they're asking you more questions, exactly like you said, it's like they have your interests at heart. What do you want to do? What do you want out of this? Whatever it is, car, theater, integration, whatever it is, it's like they have your interests at heart. That's what you want to go with.
Theaters are a great example of it. I mean, I can't even tell you how many times they're like, yeah, I want to build a theater. What projector do you like? Whoa. Yeah. Do you even know what room yet?
Yeah.
How many people do you want to fit in? You know, do you want to watch movies? Do you want to watch television? Is this a dedicated room? Do we have light control? Are we ramping? are we doing stage theater? Like, you know, are we acoustic treating? Are we light treating? You know, I have 10,000 questions that I actually can plug into projector math, right? Well, no projector math, and give you a lot of those answers. And your first question to me is, yeah, do you like this model projector?
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
If you ate, I'd hug you. I have listeners that this is the best projector. This is the best projector. And they all know.
Maybe a perfectly fine product.
They all are. When we're getting into the stratosphere we're talking about, they're all great products, right? The most pushback I ever got on this podcast from emails and DMs and whatever, it'd be like, when I said I have a Sony, I literally got it a month before I started doing this podcast, like 4 years ago, right? And now everybody's like, oh, this is the better one. This is the better projector. I'm like, you don't know the variables. And this is the one I like. Never mind when you get into anything like this, speakers, for some reason, projectors are black and white. There's good, there's bad, there's this and that. But when we get into speakers, people are okay with the difference in speaker sounds. Yeah. People are okay with that. But projectors, no. Nope, you can't have a choice. There's a better one. And it's great that you said, there's so many variables. And I have a projector guy. I have a calibrator, and I trust his opinion. And he asks me, what are you going to... He knows me. We've known each other for 20 years. So he knows what I like, what I'm going for, and that's what we go with. That's what I tell people about getting a calibrator to your house. Don't get the calibrator that wants to come out and tell you to go away because he doesn't want you to see what he's doing. Don't trust that guy. Trust the guy that wants to talk to you, learn about you, show you what he's doing, show you the differences, and really get into it with you. And I've never met an integrator like you. I've talked to some. I've looked into this. The only one and he's not an integrator. I've had him on my show. He's just getting into Control 4 because he wanted to put one in his house. But this Brett Bjorkquist was on my show a while ago, and we've had a great relationship since because he's a lot like you and me, very passionate about this stuff. But he's not an integrator, but he loves this stuff. But we can't duplicate what you do. So you have no threat of telling me all of this stuff on here on a podcast, like, this is what I do for you. Like, I'll let you watch me paint cars. You're not gonna be able to duplicate what I do. People have tried.
Well, you know, what information I can pull out of that Sony projector?
What?
So obviously the automation system can tell it to turn on and tell it to turn off. It can tell if it's spinning down. So it doesn't try to, if you press the power button, it doesn't try to turn it back on, right? And get things out of sync. Right. Okay. Right. Cause you've never done that before, right?
No, not me.
And once the bulbs hit a certain hour point, I have my system generate an alert to us. We can pull the hour is available.
Yeah.
There's a SDK that Sony writes for their projectors, and most of them use the same one. Mind you, whether you buy their $3,000 one or whether you buy their $65,000 one, they use the same SDK. Talk to it. And I don't know if you guys know what an SDK is, but software development kit. It's just a language. It's a very basic language.
Yeah.
When it talks. So, you know, I can pull the bulb hours out through IP or the serial port. And I always leave a second bulb in everybody's house. You buy a projector for me, the line below it is a price for another bulb. I'm selling you a second bulb at the same time I sell you the projector, and you're gonna, and we're gonna put it in the drawer in the rack that's in the basement, right? And I can get an alert from my system once you hit a certain number of hours, so that I have a buffer time to get over to your home and change the bulb.
So,
or I can just generate a part. Do you know how to change the bulb? There, right. You have one. I reorder you another one to replace it whenever. And whether the client wants to change the bulb or whether they want to use one of our service visits, that's up to them.
Yeah.
But we're proactively telling them, you hit this number of hours on your projector. Now it's time to change the bulb. But, you know, and we'll do it for you as part of one of your services.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. It's like I check mine every, I'm the smarts. I check it and I I just changed my bulb too. It's funny you say that. Wow.
That's becoming less of a thing with laser, but whatever.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this though. With laser, there is a lifespan to that, but you probably haven't run into that because laser hasn't been out long enough for anybody to run into that yet, right?
It's been out a good number of years yet. Like, it's been out long enough that projectors I sold at the same time to somebody else, their bulbs have failed.
You know? Yeah.
I mean,
it
might have been out 5 years.
Yeah, but the projected lifespan, sorry for the pun, but the lifespan of a laser is supposed to be, under normal usage, would be like 10 years of a normal projector system, right? Because usually you're not watching your projector system as much as you're watching a typical display in a living room. So maybe 10 years out of a laser, whereas if I get a year and a half out of my bulb, and I do use my theater more than most people would, but even still, a year and a half, I'd probably get 6 years out of a laser. So it still hasn't been around long enough for us to know what happens. Do you know? Have you ever seen a laser fail?
I have not had a laser projector life out yet.
Cool. That's great to know. Because, I mean, I'm looking my next, my new house, I'm looking at getting a new projector and everything. I like the bulb for the security of it, is because you can always update. You can always just change the bulb. I was just always afraid of when the laser fails, changing a laser is not really cheaper. It's not, I mean, and it's exactly. So I'm like, I didn't want to run into that, but if they're good for 6-7 years and, like you're saying, not much of an issue, then and nobody's seen the issue yet. And, you know, so that's
probably there's a lot less heat, and anything that has less heat tends to last longer.
True. Yeah.
The funny thing is I imagine a lot of your listeners are like, why the heck would anybody need that? A message comes up on the screen that says, you know, change bulb. A lot of projectors do that.
Yeah.
Right. The message comes up and it says, gives you some sort of bulb error. And that's totally true, right? And the average person would be like, yep, yeah. But sometimes the theater is in the basement and only the kids use it. They ignored that. And then it's a party and it's an emergency, you know? So I understand that, you know, it's reasonable that that thing said that every time, but a lot of our clients these are big, busy households with many members of them and lots going on and, you know, they don't necessarily, not everybody goes into every room. That's true in most households.
Hey, it happened to me. I'm the home theater guy with a home theater podcast. And years ago, obviously before I had the podcast, I had my buddies over to watch a hockey game. And the message had come up and my projector failed. But not, it had come up previously, but I was too busy watching a movie. I'm like, okay, I'll get to that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Then my buddies come over, and you don't think that it's just going to go, poonk. I'm like, uh-oh. And here are four guys sitting on a single couch in front of a 40-inch television out in a different room when we all thought we were watching a 110-inch screen in the theater. I was like, sorry, guys, but if we want to finish the game, we got to go out here, and we look like donkeys.
Well, you remember what I said before? Typically, I think the clients are in the way of their own happiness. It's like, oh, yeah, I got to get to that. oh, my internet didn't work. If something doesn't work, they learn that they reboot something and it comes back. And they get pissed off every time they do it, but they keep doing it.
Yeah.
And so what happens is these little things just start happening more. And then next thing you know, you're like, I'm dicking around with this all the time and nothing works. Right. And at that point, you've fried and you've upset and you've pissed off the customer.
Right.
So, because good, honest people with all the right intentions will suffer in silence. Hmm. You saw the projector thing. You're like, I'm going to finish the movie. I'm not thinking about this now. And then you move on with your life. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's just one part in one room. Right?
Right.
The firmware update comes up on the AVR. It says update the firmware unless you turn that setting off. Or some of them don't even have it anymore. You're like, man, I gotta do that. I gotta get to that at some point, you know?
Right.
And you just add that up and you wind up living in a house that doesn't make you happy, whether you got it done by a professional or you did it yourself.
Right.
So as I said, our work really begins once the installation is finished.
Yeah. And you're 100% right. That suffer in silence, because especially with a home integration like that, there's so many variables. And when each variable fails, it's a small thing. But then as they add up, that's where you get down to your 17%, like you said. And years later, when a customer says to when someone that's had something installed, like it had, you know, home integration system installed, 5 years later, somebody goes, what do you think of this? Oh, it was fun when it started, but now I wouldn't do it again because they just fail.
Yeah.
You've answered that.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic.
A decade ago, the majority of IoT devices were sold through the CEDIA channel. So I'm a member of CEDIA, mm-hmm. most integrators. I don't know if you guys know what CEDIA is. It's Custom mm-hmm. Electronics oh, Designers yeah. and Integrators Association. Whether you're a member of CEDIA or not, we call ourselves part of the CEDIA channel. Now we sell a small fraction. The CEDIA channel sells a small fraction of the number of IoT devices that are sold. So we're, you know, homes are getting, like you're picking up an IoT device as you're getting a pack of chicken at ShopRite, you know, like stuff is just creeping in your house.
Right.
You know, every time somebody just buys something new, I'm like, I bought a new light, came with an app, you know, like,
right.
I bought a new microwave, came with an app, you know, like, and that's not necessarily evil in amongst itself, but what happens is it means that we cannot fight the ever evolving yet degrading user interface that we have to deal with to do our everyday.
Yeah. And you can't go backwards. It's getting hard. I mean, I'm building a house and it's like to try and do it simple. It's almost impossible. Like you just can't go backwards and
it takes an expert to make it simple.
Yeah.
You're trying to make it simple by installing a manual transmission.
Right.
You can't. You have to install an automatic transmission. That's very complicated, but yet it's very easy.
Oh, and it's, man, this is awesome. I could.
Sorry about that.
No, I'm fascinated by it. Don't be sorry. It's audio only, but everybody, you have a huge grin on your face. I love this. I love the idea of it. I'm like, I'm fascinated by it. And it's, you know, man. And I could talk to you all day. I could I said to you when I gave you the overview yesterday on the phone, I'm like, this is what I mean. And you're like, how long does it go? Oh, that's the $1 million question right there. I could just keep on going, but man, it's so how you're a couple of years younger than me and
I'm 51.
Yeah. I'm 53 this year. So yeah. And how long are you going to be doing this? Cause I don't think you have a retirement plan in place, do you? You just want to do, you like this.
I do. I mean, my retirement plan is my residuals, right? I have clients that are on. So if I decided to sell my business, it has value.
Okay.
because, and I know, you know, enough to be dangerous about valuations of companies, but when you do a valuation on a company, you take the gross sales or the gross profit times some multiple.
Yeah.
And then you take RMR and you multiply it by a much, you multiply that by a much larger multiple. The alarm industry learned this a long time ago, right? So the alarm industry is a much more mature industry because it's been around since the 60s, really, the 70s, you know? And they learned that, oh, it's not about installing the alarm, it's about monitoring, right?
Yeah.
So the ADTs and lots of alarm companies in the world, you want to sell your business to them? There's no negotiation. There's a multiplier times the number of dollars that you bring in RMR. That's what your business is worth.
Right.
Last I heard, I think the number was like 7 times.
Oh, so now,
they wouldn't buy my business, but in general, RMR businesses are worth significantly more. And that's why we're not a large company. We're a dozen people. We're a dozen person company, right?
Yeah.
But we get to punch above our weight.
Yeah. Well, you're providing a fantastic service, you know, that I think in years to come is going to be more and more more and more prevalent in right now you're in higher end homes, but I see this coming because it's going to need to be.
Well, another problem statistics of this industry. So I think it's like 75%+ of all grid integrators in the United States have how many employees or less? I don't know if I said that question.
I get exactly what you're saying. Like what 75, like how many people, like what's the average of companies like yours? It's got to be.
How many employees is in the average size company?
Right.
In the United States, that's an integrator.
I would guess it's like yours. I'd guess it's like yours, no?
No. I'm outside of the 75%.
Really? Okay. So what's the average then? 3.
The average integrator in the United States, now that's not measuring the number of dollars that is spent, but right. That's the number of companies. The average integrator has 3 employees or less.
And how long, now here's another one. Do you know this? How long do those companies last?
Some of them last a really, really, really long time. In fact,
really,
one of the guys that works for me, I kind of acquired, we merged, I pulled him. He was a one-man show for 30 years. Great guy, hardworking, smart as hell, cares.
Yep.
Right. But he decided a long time ago, I don't want to have employees. It's too complicated.
Right. Well, that's me. I'm a one man show. I used to work for a company, same idea. And I'm like, especially with what I do, you have variables. I have variables. My variable's weather, right? Bad day. I work outside fixing people. Most of my work is that way. I was tired of it. I'm on my own now. I do it by myself. So yeah, I could see that. But how do you manage?
Well, like you said, the work that you do and the service that you provide is in essence completed when you finish.
Right.
So, you know, we just, as we grew, I started looking at this like, oh, you know, I need another installer. I need another salesman. I need some installers. I need some more programmers. You know, you grow. And I finally said, you know what? One of my installers, and I don't use the same one every day, but I have 2 or 3 installers that somebody, one of them is on our help desk, sitting in front of a computer, receiving calls, working on support requests and customization requests every day. And that same person also is prepping parts to go out and building our new racks for our jobs that are going out. So we always keep an automation engineer not at a customer's home. And when you're a company of three people, that's impossible.
Right.
You're like, I can't put a third of my staff and my most talented person at a desk.
Right.
I can't finish the Smith job unless they're at the house programming. So, you know, inherently, and mind you, I'm in the industry a long time. Lots of these guys that are the smaller companies, guys are amazing. My hat's off to them. Like, they're hardworking. They care. They would not be able to be on this podcast without their phone blowing up because they're constantly getting text messages from their customers.
Right.
And I love these guys, but I tend to pick on them a little bit because I say to my customers, if you call your integrator and they answer on their cell phone, or if you text your integrator, you have a really, really, really good sign that you will not get good support. I'm like, well, what do you mean? Text me right back. That's person-to-person communication.
Right.
It means your support is coming from one individual in that company.
Right.
Right. And if they're doing something else, on vacation, need a minute to themselves, have a family emergency, are in a sales call, are in the bathroom, if they're doing anything else,
right,
your message doesn't go to the rest of their team.
Right. That's my business.
Anybody doing support via text message is in the beginning, they're like, it was great. They text me all the time. But that individual that's running that company, their own success will absolutely strangle them. And then they will do the thing that every other integrator does, which is the number one biggest complaint in the industry. Nobody gets back to me. Because if everybody is texting one person and a few years go by and God forbid you're successful and sell a lot of jobs,
right,
that person will not be able to continue to perform at the same level.
Correct. And that's
fundamental change of the way you do business.
That's, well, if you're a customer of mine, I answer your call. But that's why that analogy was in the article. I read that and it resonated with me because that's me. It's like if a new dealership calls me and if they get through to me, which they usually don't anymore, I don't take the call, which that related to me completely because where a dealer will get me, well, they'll corner me at another dealership. Hey, I got this dealership down the street. It'll be a big name dealership that I know has a lot of cars. And most people would like love that. Be like, oh, I'm looking for work. And I'm like, I can't. And they're like, oh, I can guarantee you I'll give you this much work a week. And they give you the big, big number, right? And you'd be like, if I told the listeners, they'd be like, well, I'd do that. Yeah. But if I took, and I tell them this, if I take you on, my customers are going to suffer. And then you're not going to like me.
Yeah.
And now I've just, and now my customers don't like me because I can't handle both of these at the same time. So I get it. You're 100% right. And the fact that you're able to do this and grow a company too, because it's a hard industry to do that in. And I think that's why you have the smaller companies, the smaller guys doing it, you know, amazing.
Amazing. And then, as I said, your own success will strangle you.
Yep.
And absolutely. You really, really have to support these things.
Yeah.
And you put that all together, you can see where I landed, where I did.
Yeah. That's it.
And,
it is.
And here's the thing is the industry knows it because, and I don't want to give out information that's not exactly accurate, but I think the writing is on the wall. For these let's think about it. Apple, Google, and Amazon all tried to go into the smart house business roughly a decade ago, right? HomeKit came out in 2014.
Yep.
It's been about a decade. You'd think they would have it figured out. But the level of adoption of HomeKit, Amazon Alexa for home, run your house, and Google Home has been single-digit percentages, right?
Yeah, well, yeah.
They just haven't done a good job. So what'd they do? they actually gave up. They surrendered, and the three enemies got in bed together and made matter, right?
Oh, is that what that has? That's what happened? That's where matter came? I didn't know that. I haven't really paid attention to that. And
whether they built it or whether they all decided to agree to use this platform that was a third party, whatever. So do we have three platforms? Did we have three platforms and now we have one? Or did we have three platforms and now we have four? Mm-hmm. The answer is we have four now.
Okay.
And it'll take quite a while before they'll get it eventually. They have enough money. Eventually matter. But we just got matter 1.0, and every single IoT manufacturer that wrote software to work on Amazon or Google or Apple or whatever has to rewrite their firmware for their product to now work with matter. It's going to take a long time for that to happen, and some parts won't even do it. They'll just say, nope, it still works on the old legacy platform that all three are still supporting, but individually. Mm-hmm. And new parts will come out. They'll just make them Matter compatible and not HomeKit, Google, Apple. So you give it 5+ years, and Matter may at that point then be a viable product because there'll be enough stuff that. But in the meantime, it's left to us professionals, right? Those are the only true platforms that work, that have high adoption rate, right? That are bulletproof, that use professional and can offer support. But Control4, Crestron, and Savant realize they have to get clients support. Mm-hmm. If they don't, they're going to use another option. And those options are going to get easier and easier and easier to get to.
Right.
So it's been our responsibility as the integrators to provide support to our clients. And as an industry, we've done a really bad job at it. So we have to change.
Right.
Because the clock is ticking.
Now, do you see more people changing? Or are you literally like one of the few that are doing it in this?
So I've been doing it for a long time. I've got about 8 years I started this leasing model.
Yeah.
And, you know, like any entrepreneur, I've got lots of ideas all the time. I implement some of them, and some of them work and some of them don't. This one has been wildly successful. And you saw the article, but this has been in a long list of things that's been going on in the last 18 months. There's been several other podcasts, Automation Unplugged with Ron Callis. I've done that twice. I won ProSource Dealer of the Year last year. That was a big honor. Thank those guys a lot. And there's been a lot more buzz about it. So I think the industry is finally ready to listen.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's starting to actually feel the pain.
That's just it. It's like again, I'd say it wasn't something that was topical to me as a home theater. It's like I always wanted, I'd add it into my home theater if I could. But now it does seem like, at least I'm older now. I'm 50. Like I said, I'm 53. So I would maybe a little less hands-on and a little more time away. But seeing how this works, it's...
But here's the thing is like, even you take a home theater. Mm-hmm. I know you've plugged it all in. I know you know how it works. I know you can create every scenario you want. However, how nice would it be to pick up your remote control, actually go to your curtains and just pull them open and your system powers up. And if you just pulled the curtains open, give it a tug and it starts moving and that action powers your theater. Or you picked up your remote and you press the watch button. And you're flicking around your movies. You're looking through your kaleidoscape. You're like, I'm going to watch Apollo 13. Yeah. Let's hear some rockets take off, right? And because you selected Apollo 13 on your kaleidoscape, Kaleidoscape has a great, great SDK.
Yeah.
Well, I can say, oh, shit. My automation says, gets back the message from the Kaleidoscape that that movie's in 235. So it either sends the command to your Lumigen, or it sends the command to do the zoom on your projector, your masking comes down, or your curtains close a little bit, or I'm sorry, they open a little bit,
yeah,
right? And you go into full 235 mode. You pressed no other button except for selecting what movie you want.
That's why I loved Kaleidoscape. I can't integrate that stuff yet. I can't afford all the stuff you mentioned. I'm like, oh, I'd love to have that. Right now I get up and I put up my manual masking. I do all that, but this is stuff to dream about, and hopefully I can get there.
Even if, like,
it's awesome.
You know, masking, you know, you can buy this crazy, ridiculously expensive Stuart masking screens.
Yeah.
I like using curtains.
Yeah.
Like the theaters do.
Yeah.
I just close the curtains a little bit and open them a little bit.
Yeah. That's wow, you just gave me a whole other idea. I love that idea. Like you were saying, like I go over and I open my curtains. I'm like, why am I opening my window curtains? And you were talking
about the curtains in front of the projector.
I know. Now it's like, but I'm like, why would
I? We used to have to do 4:3 a lot, right? Because YouTube used to be 4:3 not that long ago.
Right.
We did a lot of 4:3.
I used to have curtains in my theater at one time. Now I don't. It's cleaned up a little bit. I changed the look, but I used to have curtains across the front. But yeah, it's like that would be fun. Automated curtains. You just open them up and your theater turns on.
Even if it's just one room, you can see. You're like, oh my god, I want my Lumigen processor, and I had my professional ISF or THX certifier come and give me several profiles, right? Mm-hmm. Those profiles could be for day or night, or whether the windows open or whether the windows are closed, or whether it's a movie. Why should you have to manually select those? That should happen automatically, right? Obviously the lights can dim, right? I have some guys say, hey, I have the door locked so the kids can't come in.
That's hysterical.
You know,
does that depend on the rating of a movie?
No, we put the you know, movie on air, the on air sign. We turn the on air sign on because the movie's playing, you know. Yeah, you know, like, and then there's these really cool video processors that'll extract the average color that's currently on the screen.
Right. Yep.
And turn that into a DMX command so that we can make the lighting behind the screen that color. So, you know, if you had the lights off 100%, great. You don't want that on. But, you know, there's, if you built yourself a really cool theater, it could easily take you a half an hour to press all the right buttons to get sit down and start eating popcorn and watching a movie.
Or you could just push play, which is what I always say. That's how I end my podcast. Go push play. Yeah. And it's like, go push play. Make sure Keith programmed it for you.
Well, that's the rule of 99%, right?
Yep. Oh, man. Oh,
what other questions did you have for me?
The big one was, when can you be here? But I can't afford it right now. Oh, it's awesome though. I, like I said, I'm not afraid to dream. I'm not afraid. I mean, all the stuff I have a Lumigen, and it's like, I'm so excited. I even got that, right? Cause that's getting my pick. I bought that because, like you said earlier, we were talking
about your video calibrator. Loved that you had that.
Told me to get it. And no, but he loves calibrating my system, but I had an issue with, you know, tone mapping and stuff with the Sony projector and my streaming. I had an issue. I was getting a lot of, you know, crushing the blacks and stuff in certain shows on streaming services. And I was looking for a way to solve that. And it was like, we worked through it. And he's like, look, just get the Lumigen. And I did. And that was a big step, but all of these things you're talking about, it's like, I didn't even know that was possible. Like I knew the stuff about Kaleidoscape.
The funny thing is the Lumigen will spit back to me also what the aspect ratio is. So if you don't have a Kaleidoscape, I can get that data from the Lumigen.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, my projector guy, he's like, get the Lumigen before a Kaleidoscape. He's like, Kaleidoscape is awesome. He's like, but that's one piece. Lumigen's going to upgrade every input in your system. And I'm like, okay. So that's what I did with that. But yeah. And
people get scared of buying that kind of stuff, right? People get scared of buying, you know, I mean, like what a basic AVR is like a grand, you know, you're walking the door to grand, you know, good ones, two, three, whatever.
Right.
And you're like, oh, man, if I bought one 4 years ago, it probably didn't have HDR.
Right.
So, and you're like, I just want HDR, and now I have to change this whole surround sound processor, which is why we lease them. Yeah. Oh, you want more? Take that back. You want to go 8K? What do you want? You know, like.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Do you do just theaters? Sure. Or do you just do homes? Oh, you'll do just the theater?
It's usually we're doing the theater as part of the home.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh. But you see, you got my gears.
And I happen to be a fan of video calibration. I even went to class. I went to school, which was mind-blowing and cool. I went to THX video calibration class.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily enough, before George Lucas had sold the company.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I went out to Skywalker Studios and saw that. That was, and mind you, THX and ISF, they principally use the same, and it's really, really, really stuff. There's not a lot of opinions in there. It's more science.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's, and that's the thing about the, you know, ISF calibration and any of these, the calibrators, when you really sit down and talk to them, it's, yeah, it's more science. It's about.
I thought I was going to do that, right? I went to the class for it and bought all the gear and realized that, wow, you know, like, you don't have to tell me what you paid, but to calibrate the average TV, not a projector, how much money can you get? And the calibration tools that you need, that color spectrometer, that I haven't looked at one in a long time, but I think I spent $12,000 on mine.
Oh yeah.
And I needed the video generator and I needed the software.
It's like 20 to 30 grand.
And then next thing I know is, well, my color generator wasn't a 4K generator.
Right. Yeah, so exactly.
And I was like, wow, this is, yeah. I mean, it's not hard to drop, at least this is a dozen years ago, 20 grand on video calibration equipment.
Right.
Then you go to somebody's house and you spend 3 hours there, and what do you get? $500?
Yeah. Yeah. That's
takes a long time to break even. And I was like, you know what? There are guys out there that just love this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's their passion. And it pretty much none of them do it as a full-time job because couldn't make a living doing it.
No, you got to get, you have to get jobs, like big jobs, big houses, big clientele to make it. And my guy, he does that. He's, you know, but those are few and far between, but then you do the $500 jobs in between.
Yeah.
But it is a lifestyle as well. Like you have to adjust your, like my guy's like, I got to adjust how I'm living. You can't have extra, you know, cause he, like you said, they love what they do and it's, yeah.
No video calibrator ever pulled up in an expensive car.
Nope. Not if that's his sole job, but if he's any good at it, that's his sole job. And these, yeah, they're great. So you got to
make a whole lot more money teaching the class than doing the calibration.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's 100%. Yeah. So, all right.
What other questions did you have for me?
I didn't really. This has just been an amazing. Your passion is just, that's what I was so enthused by. Reading and reading about you, you just get the quotes, right?
Well, I didn't write the article. Jason Knott did. Jason's a great writer,
right?
And he approached me through a vendor. Like when you're asking about vendors, one of the vendors says, "Oh, I know this guy. You got to talk to him." And, you know, he came up to me and I think we had met once before, and he said, "I really want to do an interview with you, and then maybe turn it into an article." And I thought the article was going to be about leasing, which it mostly was. And I really kind of, you know, I thought that's what it'd be about, but it seemed to be more of, you know, Keithisms and a little bit of an expose on me. So I have approached him about doing a second article, and I want to call it the dirty secret of the industry, list all the things that I think are the dirty secrets that are not being done by evil people. They're just
right
kind of stuck doing it the way they used to do it.
Well, yeah, it's not a bad intention. It's just the way business has been done, and it's hard to get out of that. But you apparently have done it.
Well, I decided that it was too painful not to. And now
you want to keep doing it. Yeah. And it's like, and I don't know now. All right. Here's a question. Did you do it because you're so it's a question, but a statement is it, did you do it because you're just so honest about it? You wanted to keep doing it, but doing it in an honest way. You know what I mean? Like getting back to you, like you were tired of not answering that phone call because you needed to make money.
I have no problem with making money. I don't think anybody that says I want to be profitable, I don't think that makes them a bad person. Some people think
no,
and that's their opinion. So, you know, I believe in capitalism. I'm an entrepreneur. I want it, but nobody got into my industry because they wanted to make money. We got into this industry because we loved this stuff. We yep. loved it. But then after time goes on, you're like, wait a minute, I love this stuff. I care about my clients. And for me to be able to do what they're asking me to do and do what I love to do, I need to stay in business and I need to be profitable.
Right.
Well, somebody could say, well, you know, you could just come and do that for free. Well, if I, you know, why? Well, like a service call. People in my industry do service calls for free all the time. We're like, you just came, you just did this, and now something's not working. So if you do that for every single customer, you're not profitable.
Right.
If you're not profitable, you're not in business. And then those customers have to start over anyway.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. When I went on my own, okay, left the company and went on my own doing what I do, my dad pulls me aside and he goes, look, it gets to exactly what you're talking about. My grandfather, his father had his own, he was a butcher, had his own butcher shop. And they couldn't afford the Christmas ham, or they couldn't afford this. So he just gave it away. And then gave away his butcher shop, lost his business. Because if people don't get that side of it, it's like, you want me to stay in business? I want to stay in business. I have to make money because I have to provide for myself. But there's a reason for this. And my father didn't want me to do that. And he knows who I am, just like my grandma. Like when I do personal jobs for people and like my friends and family that damage their cars, I don't even charge them because I can't. If I told you what I charge people, you'd be like, what? And then they'll give you like $20. Be like, seriously, you think I go to everybody's house for $20? But you know what I mean? It's like, that's friends and family, but a business is a business. And what you're doing is, I like I said, it's the passion. Starving Artists came from that. It's the passion, right? And you've melded the two. How?
So it's parts.
Yep.
Service.
Yep.
Customization and extended warranty have all become one thing.
That's awesome. So how can people, I mean, I know how to get in touch with you, but how can people get in touch with you? Are you like this with everybody? Is this why you like, hey, yeah, just call me up and I'll be like, what kind of like,
I love talking about this industry. I love talking.
I know.
If people want to get a hold of me, my website is www.totalhome.tech, T-E-C-H. So www.totalhome.tech. Our phone number is 877-550-5150. And my email address is keith@totalhome.tech, K-E-I-T-H.
All of that's in the show notes as well, so you didn't have to write it down if you're listening, but you're giving all of that out, and that's awesome. That's, oh man. I hope to work with you someday. on my place.
Because love to.
Yeah, I know. but like I said,
if you're ever down there, you should come take a look at the theater in our flagship showroom. I got to design the shape of it from scratch. So there are no two parallel walls in the entire room, including floor and ceiling.
Really?
Yeah. We actually couldn't build most of it. We had to build the structure out of steel because it was such a unique shape.
Wow.
And then just a basic structure in steel. And then we did wood and then offset 2x4s and layered sound materials and different density foams in each section. And
wow. That's it. Oh man. It's funny. My buddy, he does sprinkler systems, like fire suppression, and he's doing a house in Martha's Vineyard. And he sent me the plans, and he's like, there's a, what did they say? It was a 500. Yeah. It was $500,000 budget for the theater, just for the theater. And he thought that was crazy. And I was like, yeah, that's not crazy. I was like, I know what these things cost. I'm like, that's about right. That's probably a little low for Martha's Vineyard. Oh man, that's awesome.
Well, I have to actually get going, so I'm going to sign
off. Oh wow,
we can do this again.
Only 2:37, Keith. Come on, I told you we could go 3 hours. I'm just kidding. Thank you so much for your time. I mean, literally, just reached out to you the other day, and here we are. So. Please, anybody that has the means or the interest, please reach out to Keith. This is amazing. We need to support more things like this, because I think what you're doing just with home theater, with integration and stuff, you're changing things. And I really, really like it. Really appreciate your time. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Cheers, everybody.
Go push play. Make sure Keith did it.
Hey Fred.
This has been a Hey Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.